This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. The midterm election is just days away, and while some races look as if they've already been decided, there are many where the polls show candidates are running neck and neck, with voter turnout being the key to a win. Will Republicans take control of the Senate? Could Ed Fitzgerald stage a last-minute surprise and become Ohio's next governor? And will Mitch McConnell become the next Senate Majority Leader or have his 30 years in Congress come to an end? Here to take a hard look at those and other questions as Election Day nears, our political junkie Ken Rudin, Dr. Jean Beaupre, Xavier University Assistant Director for Philosophy, Politics, and the Public Honors Program, and Director for Government Relations, Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau reporter Joe Ingles, and also WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. And later in the show, Scott Wortman, Kentucky politics and government reporter for The Inquirer, will join us. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And it's a very full panel today. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. And Ken, I understand you have some great news. You and Neil Conan are coming to Cincinnati next month. Can you tell us about that?
We are?
No. I am. You better.
You better be.
We were. I am very, very excited about this. We are doing a Political Junkie Roadshow. All the fun stuff we used to do on Talk of the Nation, and of course, we used to do a lot of fun stuff that you couldn't see. Now you can see it in person. It's at the Masonic Center on November 21st. We're going to have all the fun. We're going to recap 2014, but more importantly, look ahead to 2015 and 16, because there's some kind of like presidential race that's starting in 2016.
There
but it'll
is?
Be really
no.
a good. Yeah, I read that in the paper. I heard Hillary's considering running. I read that somewhere. So anyway, we're very excited about that. We're going to have a great time. A lot of Ohio trivia questions, a lot of prizes. We're going to give away a pony. No, that's not true. We're going to have a great time.
So a live audience event. How great.
And, I know. It's a lot of fun. And what they love is like we'll do a lot of scuttle button puzzles on a PowerPoint presentation. And I get more booing there than basically since my wedding night. So it's going to be great.
And I should mention that you can get tickets and more information about that at the WVXU.org. And while we're at it, Ken, what is the trivia question for today?
Well, this is kind of in honor of Howard, because Howard loves politics and loves sports as I do, and this question combines the two. So, first of all, as you know, the Republicans are expected to win a majority of the Senate in Tuesday's elections. I mean, not everybody's convinced of that, but that's what they're favored to do. And also, Governor John Kasich is a favorite to win re-election. And now for the sports part, I'm an American League fan, and I was rooting for the Kansas City Royals last night. It was a great series. Giants won, and Bumgarner was incredible. But, okay, so here's the question. Before last night, when was the last year the American League team did not win the World Series, the same year Republicans captured the Senate and an Ohio Republican was reelected as governor?
Oh, my God.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Simple. You know, I saw you had that one online the other day, and I was thinking about that.
Okay, that was
No, it's similar, huh? But I did not.
So, okay.
This is VXU only.
Okay.
Okay, Ken, that's a complicated question, so repeat it one more time before I throw it out there to the listeners.
I don't think that's possible. Okay, here's the story. Okay. So the American League team did not win last night, but when was the last time the American League team did not win the World Series, the same year Republicans captured the Senate, which we think will happen this year, and an Ohio Republican was reelected as governor, as we think will happen this year? So when was the last time the American League team did not win the World Series when those two other things did happen?
Wow. Mm. Well, if you think that you know the answer to that question, give us a call at 513-419-7100. Take your best shot at that, and you could win a political junkie button from Ken. 513-419-7100 if you think you know the answer to that question.
Yeah. And, Karen, I want to start off with a little bit of talk about the Ohio governor's race and some of the down-ticket races. I think everybody is working under the assumption now that Kasich is going to be reelected, and probably by a pretty good margin. Well, what do you see in the down-ticket state races? Does anybody have a shot?
Are you talking to Ken, Joe?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, Joe, take a swing at that. You're the Ohio person.
Yeah, Joe.
Well, you know, the down ticket races, there doesn't seem to be the energy for those that, you know, you're not seeing that leadership at the top of the ticket. And so we're not sure exactly what effect that will have, but the lackluster energy at the top of the ticket means that a lot of Democrats won't turn out to vote, because that's what kind of drives them in there to vote. And if they're not turning out to vote, you know, as projected, this is what we're seeing in polling, by the way. It's not just us saying, oh, the Democrats are lackluster. That seriously, in all the major polls, Quinnipiac, the newspaper polls, every poll has shown that the Democratic vote, they are not excited about Fitzgerald. And when that happens at the top, then you're going to see these other candidates for the other offices suffer because of it. And the other thing is, there's a lack of fundraising. And that's pretty much across the board. Now, we have seen some candidates do better in fundraising. For example, Connie Pillich has done a very good job in her fundraising against Josh Mandel in the Ohio Treasurer's race. And we've seen money raised in some of the other races that looks a little bit better. But by and large, the Democrats are way behind on the fundraising, especially when you consider the out-of-state money that's coming in right now, kind of flooding to make sure that the Republicans get those insurance points, if you will, in those key down-ticket races.
Yeah, I mean, it would look like Pillich, you know, running against Josh Mandel, it may be their only hope of pulling something off, but they would really have to have a very good get-out-the-vote operation on Tuesday for that to happen.
Which
and
is,
the O'Donnell and you know, wait, race. In the Supreme Court, the O'Donnell race might be tight, too, because we've seen a flood of energy and money come in from other states right now for Justice Judy French to help her retain her seat on the Ohio Supreme Court. John O'Donnell, the Democratic challenger, has that, you know, wonderful Irish name that seems to do so well at the ballot, especially when people don't know who they're voting for. And remember, in Ohio, we don't have R's and D's next to our judicial candidates. So
Gene, you
that's another one.
You wanted to weigh in?
I just wanted to underscore that, you know, people look at the candidate about winning or losing, and of course that's it in the end. But your examples are great, because you need an infrastructure at this level to try and get anything done. Connie Pillich is in one district, but she needs people to organize and, you know, get votes out and raise money.
Joe, Ed Fitzgerald has faced so many troubles in his campaign. Are there any signs that he's giving up, or is he still out there campaigning and acting like, I'm here, I'm going to win this thing?
Well, he's still out there, but basically there was an implosion, I will call it, a couple of months ago in the Ed Fitzgerald campaign. We had seen this story come out about how he was in a parking lot with a woman who was not his wife around 4:30 in the morning. And there was a police report that had been filed and things that had happened. And so that comes out. And a few days later, then we see another report come out. And basically, he was driving without a valid Ohio driver's license for the better part of a decade, raising all kinds of red flags about legal issues and that sort of thing. He has apologized. He said, first of all, in that first incident in the parking lot, nothing happened. And he says in the second incident, you know, he just procrastinated, kind of put it off. You know, he did have learner's permits throughout that time, a lot of that time, not all that time. But, you know, he said he just kind of procrastinated, put it off, and he's apologized for it. And he tried to move on. And that could have been okay if he would have had enough money to pull him through, so that he could have had ads out there and focus on other things. The problem is he didn't have the money for the massive campaign that he needed. And then when you look at Governor Kasich's campaign war chest, which is about six times the size of Ed Fitzgerald's, it might even be more than that with the last flood of money that came in. But, you know, there's just no comparison. And that's a huge issue when you get into these races. You know, you can have a bump in the road, but if you don't have money to kind of come out of that bump in the road, you just kind of stay there stalled.
And what money Fitzgerald did have, the bulk of it, he handed over to the Ohio Democratic Party and said, hey, use this money to try to get as many Democrats and Democratic-leaning voters out to the polls as possible.
Right.
And so that's, you know, that's what's happening with, you know, the money that he did raise.
And why would more money come into the Fitzgerald campaign if the polls, all right. as Joe indicated, right. shows that he's so far behind? Why give money to a seemingly a certain loser?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, after these scandals broke, it was just like it just stopped. You know, the spigot turned off, and he wasn't going to raise any more money in any substantial way.
Joe, do you think another hurdle for Fitzgerald is that a lot of people in Ohio, unless they're from the Cleveland area, they just don't know who he is? He hasn't done a good job of getting his message out.
Well, that's true, too. That, you know, his campaign, the people who were in charge of his campaign, when all this came out a couple months ago about his driving record and the parking lot and all that, a lot of his top campaign staffers stepped down. They were out. So since then, the lack of organization has really been an issue. But even before that, there wasn't a whole lot that, you know, people knew. He was last on the air with his ads. Governor Kasich was out in the spring with ads defining himself. Now that's, you know, you think about it. He's been governor for 4 years, yet he's got these biographical ads that talk about who he is and what he's about. And, you know, and we didn't see any of that from Ed Fitzgerald. We did see one ad that came out in the summer, I want to say in July, right. and then this happened, and it just kind of derailed everything, and that was, we haven't seen much of anything now.
That was essentially a cable ad, too, which is very cheap.
Mm-hmm, right.
513-419-7100, if you'd like to join our conversation. Let's talk with Ruth and Anderson. Good afternoon, Ruth. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi. I've noticed that there's been plenty of coverage of Kasich with regard to his record, but with Fitzgerald, there's been little coverage about his record as county executive and mayor. And they just, the reporters constantly say that voters are not excited about Fitzgerald, but I'm excited. I saw a debate at the Cleveland City Club last week, which was very informative, but which Kasich did not attend. But the Green candidate did attend, and Fitzgerald did attend, and told us a lot about their positions. So I wish that Fitzgerald would receive better coverage about his record from the reporters. Personally, I think his missteps are far outweighed by Kasich, because Kasich has had no transparency or accountability to taxpayers with regard to Jobs Ohio and charter schools, even though a large percentage are failing, and the riots that happened at the privatized prisons, the schools and universities and local governments that have lost their funds to give lower taxes to the wealthy. That's all Kasich.
Anybody want to weigh in on
well,
that?
Well, I think there has been a certain amount of coverage of Ed Fitzgerald as Cuyahoga County executive around the state in different news outlets. But one of the problems is, you know, when you have this money disparity, it's hard for it's primarily the responsibility of the candidate in this campaign right. to get their message out. And right. if they don't have the money to do it, you can have all the news coverage in the world, but it won't make a big difference.
Yeah, I don't think. I mean, the news coverage is up to the news media to determine, and it's really the candidate's job to get the information out about their campaign. I would never do a campaign relying on the media to report about my candidate, you know, the qualities of them, other than in a, you know, a 30-second news spot or something.
But I think Ruth makes a very good point. I think we're all letting us off the hook a little bit too easily. Mm. I always compare the Ohio race to what's going on in Wisconsin with Scott Walker. Both Walker and Kasich, after they were elected in 2010, made a concerted effort to take on public employee unions and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And right. in Ohio, in Wisconsin, the media was very aggressive. They did get they actually had a recall campaign, as you remember, mm-hmm. in 2011 that Walker survived. But his numbers were pretty dismal, and they never really went up. Now, he has a very attractive, a very well-financed Democratic opponent in Mary Burke, and the media are covering everything that she's saying and everything he's saying. But Ruth does make the point that, you know, other than the fact that Fitzgerald sat in the car at 3:30 in the morning and didn't drive, I know very, very little about him. Now, of course, I'm far away from Ohio, but I kind of think that the media could do, regardless of how much money the candidates are spending and raising, the media could do a little more contrast and compare.
Joe, can you stick with us through the break?
I sure can.
Okay, we will continue pondering all things political after the break. And you can join the conversation with questions and comments at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. The midterm election just days away with lots to be decided. Joining me this afternoon, political junkie Ken Rudin, Dr. Jean Beaupre from Xavier University, Ohio Public Radio's Joe Ingles, and WVXU's Howard Wilkinson. And Ken, I think we need to get you to repeat the trivia question. We've had not a single taker so far. I think you've got people stumped.
Okay, the last time, now we think the Republicans are going to win the Senate this year. We think John Kasich is going to get reelected as governor. When was the last time the American League team in the world was in the World Series, but they did not win? When was the last time the American League team did not win the World Series the same year Republicans captured the Senate and an Ohio Republican was reelected as governor?
Okay, if you think you know the answer, 513-419-7100, and whether you know it or not, take a shot at it. I mean, what have you got to lose, right?
Right.
Let's talk with Jay in Northside. Good afternoon, Jay. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
You don't have a trivia question answer, do you, Jay?
I have no idea.
I don't either. That's a toughie 94. Today.
94?
Well, there was...
No? All
Ken, right. Is 94 correct?
94 is the correct answer.
1994, there was no World Series.
Right, and the American League didn't win it.
Right. Okay, that's what I thought. I mean, I thought 1994 right away.
Oh, God.
But there was no World Series.
You had the Republicans taking the Senate. You had George Voinovich reelected as governor, but you didn't have the American
right.
League winning the World Series because there was no World Series.
You're a sneaky guy, Rudin.
Oh,
you're sneaky. And,
right.
No, Jay.
What I wanted to say, what I called in to say is, you know, I agree with everything that was said about Ed Fitzgerald, that the sins of the Kasich administration are so much worse than those peccadilloes. However, I am that relative rarity. I am a Green, a registered Green in Hamilton County, and I would like to say that if the Fitzgerald campaign is a dead man walking, why not have progressives voting for the Green candidate, Anita Rios, for governor? After all, she's got even less money than Fitzgerald, so she's getting even less coverage. Less of a chance to win, but the Greens need votes in order to be able to show up on the ballot the next time around. Mm-hmm. And also, this is someone who initiated a vote recount here in Ohio in 2004 when the Bush-Cheney campaign stole the state and thus that election. So, you know, we ought to be giving her a vote out of gratitude for that reason alone.
And so Jay is our official winner. So once we get done talking to you here, Jay, stay on the line. And
okay.
Pete Reitmeier will get your information so that we can send you your fantastic political junkie button. Okay?
Wow. Okay. And that's because the American League did not win.
That's right.
I
yeah.
see.
That was a trick part of the question.
And neither did the National League.
And that's not even why he called in.
Right.
I'm so glad to have finally won the question.
I am too. I was starting to worry.
Thank you so much.
And, okay. And who wants to respond to Jay's comment?
Well, I mean, that's obviously an alternative, sure. I mean, the Green candidate, but, you know, that's a matter of personal choice. I mean, people who are dedicated Democratic candidates are going to go out and, or voters are going to go out and vote for the Democratic candidate. But, you know, it is an alternative that people can look to. And as our other caller pointed out, the Green candidate was at the Cleveland City Club debate
yeah.
with Ed Fitzgerald,
yeah.
and John Kasich was not. So, you know, those are the two that have actually sat side by side and discussed issues.
I agree. And I mean, I think the Green candidates, if I couldn't vote for Fitzgerald, I would certainly show up and vote, and that's probably a reasonable alternative, you know.
Joe, we're talking about down-ticket candidates who have viability. Connie Pillich's name comes up. Right. What about David Pepper? Do you have a take on that up in Columbus?
Well, the most recent polling we've seen on David Pepper is that he is behind quite a bit. But we also need to remember he's put a lot of money, of his own money, actually, into his campaign in the last couple of weeks. That has not been reflected in polls yet. And so we haven't seen what, if anything, that will do. He's going up against, though, Attorney General Mike DeWine. And Mike DeWine is a very well-known figure in Ohio. He, you know, obviously senator. He was obviously the lieutenant governor. He's been around the state house and around the state for a long time. People know him. And, you know, the thing with David Pepper is he's trying to paint a picture of Mike DeWine. And, you know, that works very well, possibly, if you have an unknown candidate. But this, you know, when you have Mike DeWine, he is a known candidate. So that remains to be seen as to what effect, if anything, that will have. It could have a repellent effect because Mike DeWine, you know, for the people who know him and like him, that would, you know, kind of keep them from wanting to vote for David Pepper because of that record.
I think there's a lot of people at this end of the state who thought that David Pepper could mount a pretty good statewide campaign. He's thought about it for a long time. He's well organized. He's, as you point out, he's well funded, even if some of it's self-funded. And, you know, he's pretty good on the stump. I have to say, I thought his commercials played right to who he is, which in this case didn't seem to work real well for him.
Well, I mean, I've talked to the people in the Democratic Party in this part of the state who said, yes, David Pepper would be a great statewide candidate, but they believe that he picked the wrong race. You know, if he had picked one of the other down-ticket races, that he might have had more success.
It's just that he's been locked and loaded for a long time, and he wanted to pull the trigger.
But speaking personally, I've seen some friends and acquaintances who've reacted to the David Pepper ad where he challenges DeWine's ethics, and their first reaction is they do take a step back at that and go, really? Huh? It does catch people off guard, and I think it may be having some effect.
You know, every campaign we get folks who say, this is the most negative campaign I've ever seen. And I don't think I've ever said that, but I might this year. I mean, it seems that that's what, when you see a flight of commercials in the morning, you know, the early morning when they're running six in a row and the auto ads aren't on anymore, five of the six are negative. And I think that's the way David went.
Yeah.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. Yeah, Ken.
I was going to say, you should take a look at some of the national ads. As bad as it may be in Ohio, it's just horrific. North Carolina has had over 100,000 ads in the Senate race alone. And there's more money being poured into that state than any other state with a Senate race. It is just, you know, you talk about the corroding effects of money in politics, and while you can make the case that limits, there shouldn't be limits, but to spend all this money and just tearing the opponent down, it's disheartening, and it's hypocrisy, I wonder.
Yeah. And, you know, you hear voters all over the place say, why do they do the negative stuff? And I know we know from having done it, you know, that even if you don't like it, one of the things that you're likely to remember from a negative ad is the candidate's name, and sometimes that's the only thing you go by when you walk in the polling.
And apparently
they wouldn't do it if it didn't work.
And apparently you can lie too.
Yeah. Joe, go ahead.
Right. I want to remind everyone, though, that back in 2000, the Chamber of Commerce and Republicans waged a very negative campaign back then against Supreme Court Justice Democrat Alice Roby Resnick.
Yeah, that's right.
And if you remember, every ad was, oh, she's unfair, and she, you know, votes for the money or rules for the money and all of this other just terrible things about her. And she ended up winning by a large margin. So, I mean, you've got to be really careful when you do those negative ads that you don't increase the name recognition or conversely make people feel sorry for the people, for the person you're doing those ads against.
And so one of the antidotes, and DeWine's probably a good example, where he has his daughters on and he has his wife on and, you know, it's, you know, he's a family man. You know, that's so, you know, that maybe that's, that is some kind of, maybe not an inoculation, but at least some kind of defense against the negative ads.
Sure, and if you go out and talk to people about, you know, just ask them, what do you know about Mike DeWine? They know that he is a family man. Right. A lot of coverage about his children, his family. Yep. They know he has the famous ice cream social every year. They know a lot of positive things about him, and that's the reason I was saying that these negative ads by David Pepper could have that repellent effect, because you could take someone that, you know, people, if they already have a pretty positive image of Mike DeWine, and you try to turn it negative, they could start taking that negativity and projecting it toward David Pepper instead of Mike DeWine.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Joe, have you been hearing, there's an idea that's been floating around from the GOP, and that's a claim that this Republican sweep that they expect to be coming equates to national approval of GOP policies. Have you heard that going around in Columbus?
Well, I have, and I've heard that, you know, it's supposed to be a mandate for all of these policies. And I think that there are some people who view it that way, but we've got to remember a few things here. First of all, you know, this whole situation with Governor Kasich, it wasn't that he was entirely popular going into this race. As far as last spring, we saw him with a negative approval rating in the polling. So he hasn't been an overwhelmingly popular governor all 4 years, and he has backed some very controversial things like Senate Bill 5, the collective bargaining bill. You know, teachers, firefighters, the union folks were really upset with him about that. And so, you know, going into it, he was beatable with the right candidate and with the right scenario. But that didn't happen. That's not what's happening here. And so we know that that's one issue. The other issue is that you see the struggle right now between a lot of Republicans and then more conservative Republicans that are on the right. And while they're in their individual areas, they might be struggling. That is going to really determine a lot as far as what happens in the Ohio House. Because right now the Ohio House is very conservative. If they get more conservative, we could see the next 4 years being more, instead of Republicans against Democrats, it could be Republicans against Republicans.
Yeah.
Welcome to Washington.
They say Ohio is a bellwether state.
Well, that's John Boehner about that. Yeah.
Ken, that was what I was going to ask you next. Given all that you hear about this, and probably a lot more that you know before you even started talking to us or listening to us, could Ohio still be a candidate for a bellwether state in the presidential?
Oh, I mean, obviously, look, if you look at the role Ohio is playing in presidential campaigns, I mean, we always talk about that Republican is never presidency without Ohio. Well,
right.
Democrats usually don't win the presidency without either. JFK was the last one. I think before that, it would go back to FDR in 1944. So Ohio is, and you do have two Republicans. You do have John Kasich. Look, if he comes out of Tuesday's election with a big victory, he's going to have to look at the White House. He's apparently talking about it. And of course, Rob, who comes from a different wing of the party, is talking about it. No question that Ohio is crucial for 2016 for both parties. And it will play a huge role in the presidential elections.
Well, I think that the governor's ads were, at least two-thirds of them were presidential appointed.
Yeah.
I mean, you could run them, you know, 2 years from now.
Right.
Yep.
Joe, thanks for joining us this afternoon. We appreciate it.
Well, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Ohio Public Radio's Joe Ingles, and we'll have more with our panel of political experts coming up after the break. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney, along with Ken Rudin, Dr. Gene Beaupre, Howard Wilkinson, and joining us now as we talk about the upcoming midterm election, Scott Wortman, Kentucky politics and government reporter for The Inquirer. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Scott, what are the polls showing in this Kentucky Senate race between Mitch McConnell and Alison Lundergan Grimes? Is it really as tight as what they're saying?
It's really hard to tell, because a lot of the polls nationally showed McConnell up about 4 percentage points, 8 percentage points, but the in-state polls by the Courier-Journal, Herald Leader, the Bluegrass poll have showed him about even the last two polls that have been released in the past month. And I believe another one's being released over the weekend. So we'll see. But it's been back and forth. But all polls have shown that it's still fairly close.
And I just noticed today that Mitch McConnell's going to do a fly around the state on Monday with a Kentucky politician who is even more popular than he is, in Rand Paul.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that brings up the question is, who benefits more from that whole thing, Rand Paul or Mitch McConnell?
How many people in this race are running for president? That's really the question.
Yeah, they have an interesting kind of frenemy relationship there where they are furthering their own political ambitions.
And, of course, Alison Lundgren Grimes has been campaigning with the Clintons. And do you think that might be a subtle way of distancing herself from President Obama?
Huh. I don't know if it's necessarily subtle at this point anymore.
There's nothing subtle about it.
Yeah.
That's a definite.
I think it's more just desperately get away as far away from the president as possible. But, I mean, the goal is to get as many Democrats enthused about the election, and it probably will have the effect of having Democrats who haven't been very engaged in the election now to start to pay attention.
And when you talk about Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton in Kentucky, they are people who can get Kentucky Democrats enthused because they've done it in the past. They've done it, in Bill Clinton's campaigns.
Yeah, he won both his election campaigns in Kentucky. And actually, that was pointed out to me by Al Cross, but in 1996, the day before the election, Bill Clinton had a rally on UK's campus. And then the next day he won by 0.9%.
Wow.
That very well probably could have put him over.
What kind of money
Scott,
is...
Scott, isn't...
Go ahead, Ken.
Go ahead, Ken.
I was just going to say, Scott, isn't it remarkable that, of course, you cannot mention President Obama's name in Kentucky, Lundgren Grimes campaign worker, but you can bring down Elizabeth Warren from Massachusetts to the base. And I mean, if anybody's more liberal than President Obama, it's Elizabeth, but she doesn't have the toxicity that the president does.
Yeah, I mean, it's just an image thing. Obama's associated with everything that Republicans hate, and so it's just the symbolic imagery that really has taken hold in this campaign.
Do you think it's valuable for her to have more women come in and Hillary? And
it's hard to say because McConnell, the polls have shown, actually McConnell's polling, well, it's pretty much even, but slightly better with women in Kentucky. Yeah, at least the polls I've seen. But then again, the polls have been changing wildly over the last month. But I don't know how much of an advantage that will be. It's hard to say. You can't say women are just going to vote for another woman just for that fact.
Right.
We had a call earlier from Martha, who was bothered about the place that money plays in politics. I'm curious about what kind of money is flowing through this particular Senate race.
Well, most of it's from out of state. Even this money that is traceable through that direct campaign committees, but there's at least $15 million in dark money, which nonprofits like Kentucky Opportunity Coalition, which thanks to the 2010 Citizen United case, doesn't have to actually be reported. So there's a lot of money. We don't know exactly where it comes from.
There's someone that works with me that lives in Kentucky and brought in one day, I exaggerate, a bushel bag full of direct mail pieces from McConnell that were just, I've never seen a collection like that. One of them you tilted and the images would change into 3D and it was remarkable. It's
the
like anything you
now.
Can think
some
of.
Some pretty fancy stuff.
Yeah, yeah, really.
And expensive stuff.
But exactly.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this was slated to be one of the most expensive races ever. I don't think that much money, I don't think it'll beat the Hillary Clinton 2000 race with $100 million like some expected, but it'll be up there, I think, by the time the final numbers are in.
Yeah, I'm curious, Scott, closing days before the election, are we seeing McConnell shifting his ad strategy and maybe going to more of a regionalized or localized approach as he puts his message out?
Well, both of them in Northern Kentucky had their Brent Spence Bridge ads, which they're trying to woo voters on, both saying their plan's better, but pretty much everyone thinks both of their plans are just political theater. They don't stand a chance.
There was a big deal about the coal stuff, and I mean, in northern Kentucky. Is that just because we happen to be in that in a market that shares that?
Yeah, it's something that I think is kind of overstated as far as the political importance. I mean, it is important, and it affects energy policy, but it accounts a very, very small portion of Kentucky's jobs, like less than 1%.
It's interesting, though. It got a lot of, I mean, a lot of the commercials were there.
It's the historical connection with the state. Right. And it's kind of also, again, going back to symbolism, it's just symbolic of if you don't like the Democrats and Obama, that's the symbolic target, his energy policies and coal industry. Yeah.
Ken, what's your sense of the McConnell-Grimes race?
Well, I think, I mean, historically, we always know more often than not that McConnell does have a tough battle. Some Democrats have really had an advantage going into the last week of the campaign, but somehow he always pulls it out. Those latest polls that the Courier-Journal and the Lexington paper and others have used, some of those polls are not widely respected. I think they're robocall polls. I think that's the Survey USA. So the sense is that McConnell does have a slight lead, as he always has. But, of course, the ultimate irony, of course, would be that for somebody who's wanted to be Senate Majority Leader all his life, for him to lose the year that the Republicans look like they could take the Senate would be just unbelievable irony. And the last time, great trivia question, the last time, the last time a Republican Senate leader was defeated was 1932 in Indiana. So if McConnell goes down on Tuesday, I don't think he does, but if he does, it's going back to 1932, the last time that's happened.
Who won the World Series that year?
There wasn't any.
Well, and Ken, you know, the way that Grimes is campaigning against the president's policies, do voters really, do they buy into that? And if she does happen to win, what's it going to do with her relationship with the president?
Well, you know, I think the first part of your question is the more instructive. The fact is, like, look, there's no question if she, by not answering the question, who'd you vote for in 2008 and 2012, it's clear who she voted for. And all she has to do is say, look, I supported the president. Of course, that's what McConnell wants her to say. But she'd say, look, I supported the president, but he has disappointed me. But for her to just distance herself so much for the president, it has to dishearten the Democratic base. I mean, we talked about how Ed Fitzgerald and the top of the ticket in Ohio is hurting Democrats, you know, Democratic turnout, Democratic enthusiasm. That's going on around the country, too. Whenever you have a Democratic Senate candidate, especially somebody who could win, dissing the president or distancing themselves from the president, it hurts turnout, it hurts momentum, it hurts enthusiasm, and ultimately that may not be the right tactic.
Boy, you should have been in the room when they were debating this issue.
Yeah.
I mean, you can imagine being in the room. I thought about it, and someone could easily think, yeah, this sounds, you know, sounds like a reasonable thing to do. You know, you hear the arguments going on and all that, but, you know, you've got some strong evidence there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it does probably. You know, I mean, there are Obama Democrats in some fairly large numbers in Kentucky in the urban areas, and they listen to this, and it cannot light a fire under them.
If you're in the room, you can imagine what they're saying. They're saying as soon as she says that, that's going to run in every commercial against her forever.
Right.
And, you know.
But it is anyways.
Now. Right. It now, well, now, yeah, right. But I think they thought they could skate if they did, and it just didn't work. Right.
Yeah.
It's a good political lesson that just take your lumps and move on.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. You can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Ken, you know, I keep hearing most of the talk being about President Obama's troubles are what's driving the election in favor of the GOP, but there are a lot of other factors in play as well, aren't there, that are tipping this toward Republicans?
Well, yes, but it all comes under the umbrella of Obama. I mean, when you think of what's going on with the Ebola crisis and the distrust in government and the fear, the feeling that government is just incapable of working, when you look at what's happening overseas with the ISIS and the Islamic extremists in Syria and Iraq, nothing seems to be working with foreign policy. I mean, once upon a time, this was just going to be about a botched rollout of the healthcare plan. Nobody's talking about the botched rollout anymore, but it's still still Obama. It's still everything under the umbrella of Obama. And just like, you know, in 2006, all you had to do was say was Bush. Whether it was Iraq, it was Afghanistan, it was Katrina, it was higher gas prices, it was a culture of corruption. It was all under the umbrella of Bush, and that's what become the 2014 midterms.
Ken, you're probably not old enough to remember this, but when Richard Nixon was so out of favor, there was a joke that said he went down, took the press down to the Potomac, and actually walked on the water, and the headline in the Washington Post was, Nixon can't swim.
And yes, he is old enough to remember that.
Howard, thank you very much, Howard.
Scott and I are saying, no, we're not
old enough to remember that. So am I. So, yeah.
And Scott just said, you mean there was another President Bush before the second? I have no memory of that.
I'm learning.
There's also an elephant in the room, though. Is some of this driven by dissatisfaction with the economy? For instance, you have two incumbent governors in Florida and Colorado where the economy's doing pretty well, yet they're facing tough races because voters there are skeptical. I just wonder how much of that mood is carrying over about the economy, how much of that's carrying over to the national level.
There are two ways of looking at the economy. The Democrats will make the case that more people are employed, that the numbers are far better. The unemployment numbers have really decreased since President Obama was reelected in 2012. But the Republicans will point out, perhaps with some kind of degree of correctness, that more and more people have stopped looking for jobs, more important people are giving up, and more people are fearful of the future, fearful for their children and grandchildren. So there is an unease out there. Now, even if it is getting better, remember in 1992, when there was a guy named President Bush, in the first President Bush, the economy was getting better in 1992, but because the term was, he was just thought of as things were going wrong for so long that he never got the benefit of it. So maybe even if the economy is getting better, for much of the last 2-3 years, the feeling was things are not going well. And again, it's hard for President Obama and the Democrats to rewrite the narrative.
And we'll have to wait until the next presidential election for a Democrat to be able to take advantage of that problem.
You know something, that I think everything has to change until Obama leaves. Yeah. And, you know, you talk about what happens if the Republicans win control of the Senate. And, gee, do you think that might mean gridlock? But, I mean, the point is that I think both Democrats and Republicans agree that there is no coming of minds between the D's and the R's as long as Obama's in the White House. Even if Hillary Clinton wins in 2016, I think people think that there can be more cooperation, more coordination, more comity than there is now.
Ken, is there one race that the media is going to latch onto if it goes one way or another as a possible sign of what's going to happen in 2016?
Perhaps. As far as the gubernatorial races, Scott Walker in Wisconsin is very, very instructive. He became, of course, this national hero among conservatives when he beat back that recall effort in 2011. Mm-hmm. And so his campaign is basically saying, look, this is the way it should be done. You stand up for conservative beliefs. You take on the public employee unions. You stand up against collective bargaining rights. And you do things the proper conservative way. If he gets reelected, one, of course, he'll be thinking about 2016, and two, conservatives will say, see, this worked. If he gets defeated, the unions get a shot in the arm. The Democrats say that this was wrong from the beginning. And so maybe Scott Walker could be emblematic of about 2016 politics, 2014 politics. And you also have the other Republican states, like in Kansas, with independents running, can somebody outside the two-party system, ostensibly outside the two-party system, win in a time when everybody seems to be divided into D and R camps?
Do you think it's possible that next Tuesday night in the Senate race, we're not going to know who is going to control the next Senate because of these potential for runoffs in Louisiana?
Well, isn't that remarkable?
And maybe right. Georgia, too.
Right. If nobody gets a majority in Louisiana on November 4th, and that's the anticipation because there are three candidates in the race where Mary Landrieu is running for a third term.
Right.
That goes to a runoff on December 6th. Because there's in Georgia there's a Libertarian candidate. If nobody, neither Michelle Nunn nor David Perdue gets a majority in Georgia, that runoff goes to January 6th, wow, even after the new Congress is sworn in. Mm-hmm. So, and then, of course, you have Alaska, which last time when Ted Stevens lost in 2008, they didn't finish counting the numbers, the ballots, until 3 weeks later. So, you know, we're going to have a very late night on Tuesday the 4th, but we may not know that much more on Wednesday the 5th.
Mm-hmm. You know, Ken, McConnell-Grimes is a very interesting race because you have the Senate Majority Leader. It's tight. He could end up, or Senate Minority Leader, excuse me, and he could end up being out of office after 30 years in Congress. But one of the other races that's really caught my attention is North Carolina. Incumbent Democrat Kay Hagan facing Republican challenger Tom Tillis. And is this shaping up to be one of the toughest, most expensive races of the 2014 midterms?
It's definitely the most expensive. I mean, because if you think of, you know, New York, California, Texas, the big Ohio, there are no big Senate races there. And if they are, they're not competitive. North Carolina is the largest state with a very competitive Senate race. Tons of outside money. The Koch brothers, Harry Reid, they're all investing millions and millions of dollars into it. And it is something to watch. It is a combination of Kay Hagan, who was first elected in 2008, who is basically running away from President Obama this year, even though she embraced him very closely in 2008, but she's running away from the president. And basically, while Tom Tillis is trying to link Hagan and Obama at every opportunity, Hagan is pointing to Tillis, who's the Speaker of the House of the state legislature, a legislature that's put through restrictive voting laws and restrictive laws regarding women's reproductive rights and voting and things like that. So that is a true ideological battle for the longest time, Hagan seemed to have a 3-5 point lead. There's a Libertarian candidate there who's taking about 7% of the vote. But that is also tightened in recent days. That's definitely one to watch.
Yeah, Jeb Bush recently took a swipe at Hillary Clinton. I was wondering about this, her comments she made about businesses don't create jobs. And I wonder if Jeb Bush taking a swipe at her, is that a sign he's getting closer to making up his mind to run in 2016?
You know something, I've talked to people who know him very well, and nobody seems to be convinced one way or the other. There's some people who say, yes, he's plotting something. Others say that the family is still not decided. Now, I think what Hillary Clinton said, of course, will be a Republican rally cry. Just like President Obama saying, you know, you didn't build this job or something like that, that Mitt Romney tried to work on in 2012. Jeb Bush, and what's interesting, although some polls say that he could be the strongest Republican against Hillary Clinton, when you go to a Republican rally and the name Jeb Bush is mentioned, there are boos and hisses on his views on the Common Core education standards, on immigration overhaul. The Tea Party wing of the Republican Party, which is not to be underestimated, certainly in presidential races, is just not happy with Jeb Bush's kind of politics. Hmm. And so while he might win in a general election, he may have tough times in places like Iowa and South Carolina.
Ken, we've got about 30 seconds left. Most of the focus has been on the Senate races. Republicans, though, they also want to add to their numbers in the House. You think their chances are good of doing that?
I do. I think they're going to win a pickup between 8 and 11 House seats, coming to like historic numbers for the Republicans in the House. But of course, you know, they want to get as many as they can because redistricting happens again in 2020, and a lot of those gains could be short-lived.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
See you on November 21st.
Yeah, absolutely will.
Absolutely.
Political junkie Ken Rudin, Dr. Jean Beaupre, Xavier University Assistant Director for Philosophy, Politics, and the Public Honors Program, and Director for Government Relations, WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson, and Scott Wortman, Kentucky Politics and Government Reporter for The Inquirer. Our panel will be back after the election, November 6th, for a wrap-up of what happened and a look ahead to the 2016 election. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. The producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. The technical director was Bruce Ellis. William White composed the Cincinnati Edition theme music. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now on 91.7.